ride. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is April 8th, 2026, and markets are ripping this morning on the announcement of a two-week ceasefire between the U.S. and Iran. Well, what have we got? We've got stocks are just moving straight up. Dow at one point was up 1,300 points ahead of the opening bell this morning. We've got bonds are ripping too. The 10-year yield is down by about 10 basis points. We got Bitcoin rallied about $3,000 late yesterday after that announcement was made. Bitcoin's trading around 72,000 now. Gold is up about 150 bucks to around $4,800. Silver is ripping $4 or $5 higher, trading around $77 a barrel. We've got oil getting absolutely clobbered here on this announcement, down $17, $18 a barrel for WTI crude, trading around $92.50 the last time I looked. The dollar is also getting clobbered here. The DXY is down by about 100 basis points. So we've got oil and dollar down, and everything else is up on this ceasefire deal. So the whole thing about a ceasefire, though, is you cease the fire, right? Isn't that how that usually works, right? You stop shooting. Again, not really my bag. I'm not an expert on these things, but I'm pretty sure the point is to stop shooting. Because since this ceasefire has been announced, we've had missile and drone attacks in Kuwait, the UAE, Bahrain, Qatar. We've had an Iranian oil refinery on Lavan Island that was hit just this morning. Now, these attacks could be chalked up to the fog of war and possibly delays in the communication lines, in particular among the Iranians, right? The Iranian leadership has been targeted. Their command and communications infrastructure has been blown up for weeks. So maybe it has taken time for news of this ceasefire to reach the commanders in the front lines. And so some of these pre-existing orders to launch missiles were carried out before news of the ceasefire reached. That's entirely plausible that that's what's happening here. Although the longer this goes on, the less and less plausible that becomes. In particular, that strike on Lavan Island by Western forces, I don't know if it was the U.S. or Israel that hit it or both, was that in retaliation for the missile attacks that took place after the ceasefire, or is this just a ceasefire in name only? Again, the longer this goes on, the worse and worse it would be. Now, we've also had Israel come out and straight up say that this ceasefire does not apply to Lebanon, in particular, their attacks against Hezbollah in Lebanon. So look, you know, this ceasefire, it's good. Right. Let's give peace a chance. It's a good thing. I think we can all agree on that. Now, all we need is for the United States and Israel to get along with Iran and Hezbollah. And I'm sure that's like money in the bank, right? Yeah. 50 years of history says otherwise, but it's a move in the right direction. For the meantime, ships are just sitting in the Gulf, not wanting to run the gauntlet in the Strait of Hormuz. There's all kinds of bluster and talking points from the Iranians and from President Trump, each side claiming victory, claiming they're going to get exactly what they want. Honestly, that BS is going to cloud the airwaves for weeks here. The real thing to watch is, are the boats moving through the Strait of Hormuz? Right now, the answer to that question is no. Maybe that will change very quickly here. If it doesn't, this rally that we're seeing in asset prices is probably going to reverse. And of course, if the shooting doesn't stop, which it still hasn't, at least not entirely, well, then this rally will also quickly reverse. Now, another thing that's rallying this morning, interesting, is airline stocks. I guess that's not too surprising. Fuel is a big input cost to airline stocks. In particular, Delta, their stock is ripping, but even though they just announced today that they're going to be taking a $2 billion charge due to higher fuel prices, or they anticipate a $2 billion hit from these higher jet fuel prices. So the stock is rallying on news that the war may be coming to an end, but at the same time, they're saying we're probably going to lose about $2 billion from these higher prices. And they're also mentioning that they may be cutting capacity, that they'll be shutting down some red eyes and midweek flights. They're thinking about cutting CapEx. That could potentially affect Boeing. And they're also talking about possibly raising fares, which has one eye on inflation now when they're talking about raising airline Ferris, because we got inflation expectations came out from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York yesterday. Those came in at 3.4%, up rather sharply from 3.1% a month ago. Gasoline, of course, was the biggest driver of that increase in inflation expectations. We've got PCE inflation coming out tomorrow. That's the Federal Reserve's preferred gauge of inflation. And then on Friday, we get CPI. What impact will we see from the Iran war in those numbers? Guess you're just going to have to tune into the show tomorrow and Friday to find out. Shifting gears a little bit to the AI bubble, my favorite topic. Bloomberg was out with a piece yesterday. Incredible piece. Get this. Bloomberg is asking the question or positing the potential that just maybe spending by hyperscalers could go down as one of the greatest misallocations of capital in history. Bloomberg is saying this. All right. Do we need to put this on? All right. Bloomberg is not wearing their tinfoil hat. This is not a Twitter rando saying this. This is freaking Bloomberg. Where have you been for the last 3 years, Bloomberg? Once again, nobody saw this coming. Now, even if, as that is being said, we've got PIMCO saying, let's misallocate some more capital, because PIMCO is currently weighing a $14 billion private credit debt offering to fund an Oracle data center in Michigan, one that Oracle's having a heck of a time raising the cash to pay for. Remember last year when all these data centers were announced, you know, those crazy conspiracy theorists and Twitter randos were saying, hey, but Oracle doesn't have the money for this. And everybody was like, it doesn't matter, just buy the stocks. Here we are half a year later, and they're still trying to figure out how they're going to pay for it. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and what's going on? Why don't we hit the right button first? Then let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and the subscribe button so you can come back and have your coffee with the Melonheads as we go through markets. Right now, the S&P 500, it is ripping higher, 175 points in the green this morning, 2.6% to the upside. Almost all of the losses from the Iran conflict have now been reversed. The Dow up 1,253 points. Almost 2.7% higher on the news of a ceasefire, not the actual cessation of fire, mind you. And the NASDAQ leading the way higher, absolutely ripping here. Tech stocks, 822 points higher, 3.4% in the green for the NASDAQ this morning. Stocks are just loving life. Meanwhile, the dollar is getting just clobbered this morning, down 100 basis points, 98.66 for the DXY. This is really oil is what's driving this, guys. As oil prices ripped on this Iran war, remember, most oil is still traded in dollars, despite what the BRICS guys say day in and day out about the death of the dollar. It still hasn't happened yet. Dollars is still what you need to trade oil. Well, if the price of oil is crashing, people will need fewer dollars. And so we're seeing the Dixie take quite a beating on this news this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we have got bond yields are down sharply. Now, this is kind of interesting also because typically bonds, in particular long duration bonds, is a safe haven asset. When you see people piling into long duration bonds, it usually means there's some kind of calamity elsewhere in the markets, and that's why people are buying bonds. That is not the case today. This is not safe haven demand. This is a case of sell the dollar and buy everything, including U.S. Treasuries. The 30-year yield is at 4.842%, down almost 8 basis points. The 10-year yield down 11.5 points to 4.229, now 4.23. The 2-year yield, 3.738%, that's down by 9.5 basis points. And the 1 month is at 3.642, down almost 1 point. A lot of bond buying, a lot of stock buying. Even Bitcoin getting bought this morning. Now, right now, there's Bitcoin's putting in a little candle. That's because the cutoff was midnight. Bitcoin saw most of its gains yesterday in the immediate aftermath of the ceasefire deal when it rose about $3,000 per coin. Currently sitting just below 72,000 at 71,944 as priced on Coinbase. And looking at the commodities board, there's a lot happening in commodities today also. Right off the top, gold is ripping here, just below 4,800 an ounce for spot gold at 47.98. That's up by $92 or almost 2% higher. June gold futures are at $48.24, higher by $138 or 3% higher. Silver is getting in on the buying too, $77.36, higher by $4.37 or about 6% higher. May COMEX silver futures, $77.56, higher by $5.50 or 7.75%. Again, this is interesting. Typically, gold and silver are safe haven assets and people run to them during times of calamity. That is not what's happening. We've got good news today, and people are piling in the gold and silver. Why? Because of that weaker dollar, right? The dollar is the denominator in price, so a weak dollar is better for gold, and that decline in interest rates, the big drops in the long-duration U.S. Treasuries, which typically treasuries are competition for gold and silver. As those yields fall, that makes gold more attractive. And so we've got gold and silver are ripping here, even though this is not really a time when you'd expect to see a lot of safe haven demand. So interesting price action going on in the precious metals this morning. Copper is up higher by 3.6%. Platinum and palladium both ripping. We've got platinum up 7.25%. Palladium's up almost 11% here. And of course, crude oil just getting destroyed here. WTI crude down 17.5%, trading just over 93 a barrel. Brent right behind it, down 16 bucks. Trading at about 91.70 a barrel. We've got natural gas is also down. A lot of commodities like your food and your grains are lower this morning also. But let's take a look at the oil chart. This is pretty interesting here. Look at this red candles here. The guys who piled into those levered long oil bets, trading the headlines around this conflict, are just getting absolutely destroyed this morning. $93.14 for WTI crude, down 17 bucks. That is a crazy candle here. We saw something similar a couple of weeks ago on that crazy Monday when oil rallied to 120 bucks, only to close lower by about $15 that day. So look, this is good news, right? The market is reacting to what can only be described as good news, the conflict at least coming to a temporary verbal end. But let's temper those expectations because, again, trading the headlines around this conflict has been a sucker's bet for the last couple of weeks. Let's look at what's happened since the ceasefire. Gulf countries scramble to intercept missiles hours into U.S.-Iran ceasefire agreement. Many Middle Eastern countries reported incoming missiles and drones from Iran on Wednesday, triggering air defenses across the Gulf within hours of a newly announced two-week ceasefire between Washington and Tehran. The U.S. and Iran agreed to a temporary truce just before U.S. President Trump's deadline to launch a massive attack if no deal was reached. The ceasefire, if it holds, would open a two-week negotiating window with U.S. and Iranian delegations expected to meet in Islamabad on Friday. All right, so those negotiations that weren't happening, apparently they were happening. Now we've got 2 weeks to come up with a trade deal. I'm sorry, I mean 2 weeks to flatten the curve. No, that's not it. 2 weeks to come up with a peace deal in Iran. In the meantime, they're still shooting at each other. Somebody want to explain that to me, that's fine. Despite the reprieve, missiles were still launched from Iran towards Israel and several Gulf states. The Israeli military said it had identified ballistic missile attacks from Iran early Wednesday, with early warnings issued in central and northern parts of the country. The United Arab Emirates said its air defenses were intercepting missiles and drones and urged the public to remain in safe places. The sounds heard in scattered areas of the country are the result of the UAE air defense systems intercepting ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and drones, the ministry said. Saudi Arabia's civil defense organization also issued early warnings of potential danger across the country, including Riyadh. Kuwait, Bahrain, and Qatar also issued alerts or activated defenses as threats emerged across the region. But it's not just the Iranians that are still shooting. Got Iranian oil refinery company confirms attack on Lavan refinery, Shana reports. This was updated just an hour ago. An oil refinery on Iran's Lavan Island was targeted in an enemy attack on Wednesday without causing casualties, the National Iranian Oil Refining and Distribution Company said. According to the oil ministry's news outlet, Shana, the company said the facility was hit around 10 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, or that's about 6:30 Greenwich Mean Time, adding that safety and firefighting teams were working to control the blaze and secure the site. All right, so this was just a few hours ago. This Iranian refinery was hit. I don't know what what to make of this, guys. All right. The missile attacks from Iran on Israel and the other Gulf countries, I could chalk that up to maybe delays in orders reaching the front line, especially because the U.S. has been targeting command and communications. It's possible that they just didn't get the message about the ceasefire and they proceeded to carry out orders. This one, though, the U.S. and the Israelis don't have any such communications difficulties. So I don't know. Is this retaliation for the late shots, you know, the punches thrown after the bell coming from Iran at the Gulf states and Israel? Or is this just a ceasefire in name only? I don't know. All we know is that there's still shooting going on. And apparently the Israelis are saying they're going to keep shooting. Hezbollah pauses attacks, sources say. Israel says operations in Lebanon will continue. This is just a few hours ago here. Lebanon's Hezbollah halted fire on northern Israel and on Israeli troops in Lebanon on Wednesday as part of a two-week U.S.-Iran ceasefire. But a lawmaker from the Iran-aligned group said Israel must also adhere to the truce or it would collapse. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said overnight that the ceasefire suspending the six-week-old U.S.-Israeli war against Iran did not apply to Lebanon, and the Israeli military said it was continuing its operations against Hezbollah there. So again, with the ceasefire thing, it's not really clear that they're going to actually cease fire. So just be careful here, right? A lot of people are piling into longs right now. A lot of people piling into levered longs. A lot of shorts are getting clobbered and margin called. There's a lot of forced buying that's going on here, but it's all based on a ceasefire that right now has yet to actually materialize. Let's hope that it actually does, though. In the meantime, the shipping companies are not in any hurry to test that ceasefire. Maersk is cautious on Strait of Hormuz shipping despite U.S.-Iran ceasefire. This one released early this morning. Maersk said on Wednesday that the two-week ceasefire agreed between the U.S. and Iran could open some opportunities for vessels in the Strait of Hormuz, but did not yet provide enough security certainty to resume normal operations. At this point, we take a cautious approach, and we are not making any changes to specific services, the Danish shipping group said in statements to Reuters. Look, there's a lot of talk about this toll booth thing, and I don't know how this is going to work. I don't see how this is going to work. All right. Apparently, Iran says we're going to keep this toll in the Strait of Hormuz, and then President Trump is out this morning saying the toll is going to be a joint venture where they're going to split the money. Where, okay, what, the U.S. and Iran are both going to charge extortion money to transit the Strait of Hormuz, and we're just going to like get along as business partners now? Okay, what happens to the first company that says we're not going to pay the toll? Are the Iranians going to shoot at them? And if the Iranians start shooting at boats again, is our Navy just going to sit there and do nothing? So a lot of questions here. I don't see how this toll booth could ever work, to be honest with you. And I don't like the idea of a toll booth either. You know, the whole like world's biggest state sponsor of terrorism charging extortion money for free trade and then using that money to pay for proxy conflicts all over the region, which, oh, by the way, that's how this whole mess started to begin with. So again, I got more questions than answers right now, but that's where we're at with the ceasefire. And even as that comes through, we're seeing the fallout from these higher energy prices over the last month or so. Delta sees a $2 billion fuel hit, with CEO cautious on outlook. This one released just this morning. Delta Airlines expects to incur more than $2 billion in higher fuel costs through June because of the Iran war, prompting the carrier to tread carefully and stick to its previous full-year profit forecast. That $2 billion hit is coming no matter what. That's fuel that they've already bought, so the ceasefire won't change that. We're not updating it in light of that uncertainty, so I think it'd be imprudent to make any estimate at this point, Delta CEO Ed Bastian said. Fuel prices have climbed sharply as the conflict disrupts global energy markets, raising costs for airlines at a time when demand has otherwise held up. The increase is forcing carriers to weigh how much of the higher expense they can pass on through fares without dampening bookings. So higher airline prices probably coming here. The airline will make some meaningful capacity reductions, reaching about 3.5% from the levels planned at the start of the quarter, he said. The affected flights would likely be in less desirable travel periods, such as overnight red eyes and midweek. He also said it's too early to discuss whether aircraft deliveries will be affected. Pay attention, Boeing shareholders. We're obviously going to be looking to save our CapEx and cash flow if this is going to be with us for an extended period of time this year, he said. Well, based on the ceasefire, maybe it won't be with us for an extended period of time, but you couldn't help but notice they're talking about aircraft deliveries there, so possibly fewer planes being bought and higher airfares. Meanwhile, though, Delta stock is just ripping this morning. Again, forget that $2 billion charge. This is all about the announcement of the ceasefire. Delta shares are up 12.5%, trading at $73.88, up by $8.32 this morning. All right, so speaking of higher airfares, let's talk about inflation because we've got a lot of inflation data coming later this week. And we did get a little bit of inflation data yesterday. We got United States consumer inflation expectations from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Median year-ahead inflation expectations measured by the New York Fed rose to 3.4% in March. That is up from 3.0% in the previous month, the highest so far this year. Consumer expectations for gasoline, not surprising. Let's see, 9.4% expectations for gasoline inflation versus 4.1% in February. Almost the entire increase was driven by that gasoline hike. Gasoline price growth surged to the highest level since March of 2022. That's immediately following the Russian invasion of Ukraine as the outbreak of war in the Middle East lifted benchmark energy prices. And here you can see consumer inflation expectations 3.4% up from 3% in February, tying the highs that we saw in December of last year and September of last year, although not quite as high as the inflation expectations we got following the announcement of the tariffs last April. All right, let's shift gears a little bit to AI. We saw this one here in Marin Talks Money in Bloomberg yesterday, and I saw this and I was just sitting there pounding on the desk saying, finally, somebody is calling this like we can all see it. Why you should wait out AI's super spending false start. That's interesting. False start is what they're describing the AI bubble as now. All right. Not the greatest technical innovation since fire. Thank you, Prometheus. No, a false start. Given the flaws of a build business model, hyperscalers may be the wrong place for your money right now. Now, this is by Marin Somerset Webb, who runs Marin Talks Money. That's a podcast that Bloomberg puts out. Would you pay for or even bother to use a calculator if you knew it was going to be right 98% of the time? And I think Marin's being a little generous here. I think AI is really only right about 80% of the time. She's being nice here. You might if you knew enough about what you were calculating to tell if an answer was wrong, but otherwise probably not. Keep that thought in mind. We'll come back to it. Now, she goes on to for several paragraphs to talk about the inherent limitations of large language models, echoing what many of the most famous researchers in the AI space have been saying. Guys like Gary Marcus, Jan LeCun have been saying for a while now. But there's some particularly potent talking points towards the middle of this article. Your large language model will always be your 98% accurate calculator. Sometimes your 70% accurate calculator. She's a little more realistic with that second number there. This is not to say that LLMs aren't useful. Of course they are, for entry-level work and checkable analysis. But they are energy inefficient. They make up information constantly. They are entirely unreliable. And crucially, unlike humans, they are incapable of rewiring themselves to learn on the job. As things stand, they are not ever going to give us the kind of general AI we can rely on. Remember, for 3 years, we've been told generative AI or general artificial intelligence is just 2 weeks away. Trust me, bro, right? Just like the ceasefire, just like the trade deal, just like flattening the curve, just 2 more weeks and another $1 trillion in all your water and all your land and your job. But after that, don't worry, generative AI. That means a few things. First, you can't or at least shouldn't use this technology for mission critical work, only for low stakes tasks or questions to which a clever and significantly more energy efficient human can recognize a wrong answer. Second, that the idea that scaling will make up for better models is nonsense. No amount of compute chucked at an LLM will make it a less hallucinogenic product. That is important for all you AI hardware guys. No amount of compute chucked at an LLM will make it less prone to hallucination. Creating AI that rewires itself and creates new information the same way humans do and avoids the kinds of catastrophic errors we see at the moment needs a full, fresh start, something Marecki and many others are already working on. In other words, back to the drawing board, back to the age of research. The large language models, the transformers, don't get smarter as they go. They're only as smart as you train them, and then they never get smarter after that. And third, that the massive spending by hyperscalers, much of it via debt, on giant data centers might be one of the greatest misallocations of capital of all time. Where have you been all my life, Marin? It just isn't required. That's particularly the case given there are already free LLM models you can download to a laptop, no data center needed, and better still, your privacy guaranteed, that do what the very large models do. If the paid for versions have already hit their ceiling and just aren't going to get any better, it looks like they aren't, why pay for them? Quite. And Marin is asking the questions here that I've been asking, mentioning the things I've been mentioning since, what, August of 2023 was the first time I pointed out that these things aren't nearly as smart as they claim they are, and that all of this debt they're taking out is wasted money, not to mention all the freaking fraud and circular accounting in the AI space. Now we've got Bloomberg referring to the AI bubble as a false start. I was cheering out loud when I read this one yesterday. Thank you very much, Marin, for this article. And even as all that is being talked about, we've got PIMCO Way's $14 billion debt deal for Oracle Data Center. Sure, you know, what's another $14 billion of private credit to pay for data centers among friends? Even as private credit goes belly up and data centers aren't delivering the promise they are, sure, let's get these two together. What's the worst thing that could happen? Pacific Investment Management is in talks with Bank of America to help provide roughly $14 billion of debt financing to build a massive Oracle data center in Michigan. According to people familiar with the matter, the deal, if finalized, would make the bond giant a key backer of a campus in Saline Township where Oracle aims to power applications for OpenAI. The financing could be structured as a bond, and PIMCO could syndicate some of these to other investors, the people said, asking not to be identified. Bank of America has spent months trying to assemble the financing for Related Digital, the developer behind the project. Blackstone is also planning to contribute an additional $2 billion of equity, Bloomberg had previously reported. I've seen a lot of articles about this Michigan data center over the last few weeks. It was initially going to be a loan, and then Bank of America was like, no, it might be a bond. And now they're like, nah, maybe we'll do private credit with PIMCO. Oracle's having a hard time coming up with the money here. Maybe PIMCO does this. PIMCO was one of the lead investors on a big private credit offering with Blue Owl to pay for a Meta data center. They actually made a lot of money on that deal. So maybe they're going to do this again. Although the people who invested in a lot of this Blue Owl debt, I think they're probably singing a slightly different tune after the last couple of weeks. But they're still trying to throw money at this problem. Hey, good luck to you. And guys, I just want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget to hit that like button. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow. We got inflation data coming later this week. For now, the ceasefire, it's a thing. Let's hope it lasts. Thank you very much, by the way, everybody, for all the well wishes that you sent me over the last couple of weeks. Once again, we're going to be doing these pre-recorded shows for a couple more days here at least. Thank you also to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.